When a person goes through the face of blah, 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 blah. Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. When a person goes through a faith crisis, what are some things that leaders can do to help? Author David Osler has written a book called Bridges that talks about some of these things, and we'll talk about what leaders can do to really help people feel more comfortable at church. Check out our conversation. In the second part of the book, I talk about three major principles that I think are important for people to feel, for them to remain affiliated with the church after they have a faith crisis. And I think if leaders understand these three issues, they can find ways to be able to reach out to people and to accommodate them, to help them, to love them, to accept them, all of these kinds of ministerial words that we want to have there. And that those three principles are, first, trust. Individuals need to trust the community that they're in. They need to trust their leaders. They need to trust that the engagement with the community will help them, and that that community can guide and give them a confident path towards their spiritual goals. And sometimes that doesn't happen. There's a lot of different ways trust can break down. You can lose trust that the prophet speaks for God. You can lose trust that the church will authentically represent its history. You can lose trust that the church will be transparent about the way in which it administers its affairs. You can lose trust in someone who's broken a confidence. You can lose trust that if you say something, there won't be a penalty for what you say. So trust becomes a big issue. And as I surveyed members that are in a faith crisis, many of them have lost trust in all of those aspects. And I could share some of that data with you if you felt like.
Absolutely, we love data.
Yeah, you and I kind of eat data for a living,
yes.
Don't we? So I asked these faith crisis members about trust. And so this is 320 people who responded that are in a faith crisis. And I asked them questions. And one question I asked is whether they agreed with this statement: my local leaders can help me with the important decisions in my life. And 0% strongly agreed with that. 9% agreed with that, which 91% disagreed in one form or another.
Yeah.
So if they're going to church and they're feeling like their local leader cannot help them with the spiritual issues in their lives, then, you know, we as a church have failed. These are largely people that are earnest in wanting to connect to God and to resolve their spiritual concerns. They're not enemies of the church. They're people that just have concerns and are trying to sort them out and understand what they believe.
Well, and even I would put myself in the 91%.
Yeah.
And I go to church.
So here's another one. I am comfortable disclosing my current beliefs to my local leaders. And 3% strongly agreed with that. 22% agreed with that, which means 75% disagreed with that in one way or another. And then it goes even further. From the outside, I appear as a traditionally believing member of the church and of this faith crisis group that has no trust in their local leaders. 78% said that from the outside, they look like a traditionally believing member. So, you know, on the outside, they're shiny and bright and they're wearing all the right clothes and, mm-hmm. you know, probably even in serving in the right callings. But underneath, they can't express the concerns that they have and that they're really struggling with. And when they call it a faith crisis, that means they're evaluating whether they remain affiliated with the church. So, you know, those are the kinds of concerns that you get with trust. The second area, and these aren't kind of so clear that they're distinct, they all overlap a little bit, but the second area is belonging. And what that means is that I feel like this is my church community. I feel like I belong. I feel like I can be who I am in the community. And it does relate to that last piece of data that I shared, but it's something more that entails.
And I convened a focus group of members in a faith crisis. And I had 80 some odd people in this group. I organized it as a Facebook forum. And it was closed and private, and no one, you know, could see it except for the people in the group. But I'd ask these kinds of questions. And I asked questions about belonging. And here's just a couple of things that people shared with me. I disagree with some church beliefs and policies. I feel if I speak up, I would be attacked and disregarded. You've kind of expressed that, right? Mm-hmm. There is no space for difficult interpretations of the theology. There is no space for real church history. There is no space for questions. There is no space for an empowered and knowledgeable woman's voice. A man will just override her thoughts. Being open in the Latter-day Saint faith doesn't make me feel closer to God. It makes me feel separated. People would be scared of me if I express my real opinions. I don't want to upset others who are still believing. I don't want to turn over any apple carts, so to say. So, you know, there's an inability for people who are struggling. We all struggle with faith. I mean, there isn't anyone who doesn't desire, at least probably there probably are people, but most of us desire more spiritual meaning in our lives. We want to understand purpose. We want to understand God.
Well, and let me just throw something in there, because I just recently released my interview with Elder Snow, the church historian.
I've heard it.
Did you get a chance to see that? So the biggest pushback that, and in fact, when he said that, I knew I was going to get some feedback on this, and I did, was when I said, you know, how do you study church history and not lose your testimony? And he said, oh, well, I just think it's so inspiring. And a lot of people wanted to say, he's a liar. I don't believe that. Church history is not inspiring. And so, I mean, I love church history. This is why I started my podcast, because I wanted to talk about it. And I wanted to talk about it warts and all. But there are a lot of people who, like Elder Snow, won't even acknowledge that there are messy parts. And we even talked about polygamy and the race essay after that. And he wouldn't acknowledge that was a stumbling block for him. But I know that a lot of people, especially polygamy and race, those are huge stumbling blocks with people.
Yeah, and you know, I can't presuppose who will have what stumbling block, right? And so if Elder Snow is not troubled by that, I have to kind of accept that at face value.
Yeah.
But I know for many people that I talked with, in particular men, although, you know, polygamy certainly was an overwhelmingly concern for women. But, you know, church history can be a problem. And the way in which I was taught church history back in my formative 60s and 70s, right, when I grew up and went through seminary, you know, isn't as transparent and direct and accurate as what now we teach our youth. Just teaching it more accurately doesn't resolve those concerns, though. And for some people, you know, just knowing that Joseph Smith was a polygamist might not be a problem, but kind of understanding the impact that had on women, you know, that might be an issue and concern. So everyone's going to kind of deal with it differently. I think one of the challenges on this is, and I introduced this, and I don't have an answer for it, Rick. I'm hopeful that people reading the book in their council meetings will find answers to this. We need to have faithful places where people can have these kinds of discussions, because there's a group of people that want to have them, and they're important to them. And we shouldn't dismiss their concerns as secondary concerns, or, you know, don't worry about that, it'll all get sorted out. And that may ultimately be the answer. But people have to process this in particular ways. And they have to be able to reconcile what for them might be very troubling and difficult, and for another person doesn't really bother them. And, you know, we're not going to have that in our gospel doctrine classes. You know, that doesn't work in that setting. Number one, we only hold them twice a month now, right? Every other week. And so if you've got a concern about the Book of Abraham, are you going to wait, you know, 4 years, you know, before you can surface that in a 1 hour class where, you know, So you have to have a place where you can kind of talk about that. And for many people, that is in these virtual communities where where people want to have conversations. The church doesn't provide a setting for that, or a ward, or you know, whatever, doesn't provide a setting, and so they find that.
The church has kind of forced people into these online communities because you just can't get them in church.
Yeah. So, you know, I've seen some wards do different things. I know of a stake where they had a kind of a difficult topics institute class, and once a week they had a teacher that would be prepared, that everyone would know what the topic was, and they'd come, and whether it was, you know, pick a topic, you know, there was nothing out of bounds in that group. And, you know, they talked about them, and it was a setting. It wasn't a setting for everyone, clearly. There were some people that came and were clearly uncomfortable, and they self-selected their way out. And there were people that continued on. I think that class probably went 6 months, and they covered about every topic that I had heard about. So, you know, people are trying to innovate around this because they see the problem. And perhaps the institutional church will kind of adopt a way in which that could be dealt with. I think much of it needs to happen one-on-one. I think much of it has to happen in kind of a ministerial way. I think we, you know, if we have people that understand these issues, they can develop personal relationships with people that have concerns, I think that can be an effective way to have these kinds of conversations. Mm-hmm. I'm not worried about kind of online communities talking about that, but I would prefer that there's also settings where people who have faithful ways through that and are aware of it and have dealt with it in the same way that someone else is struggling with it is helpful. I think much of this is just mentoring and ministering.
Well, and it just seems like some bishops need approval to do these other things. I know Kurt Bench at the Mormon History Association meeting a few years ago got up and said that he had taught the gospel topics essay. You know, there's 14 or 15 of them. They had a special Sunday school class where they taught those. I know when the book Saints came out, that's been out
about a year.
And I noticed there were 46 chapters in there, and I went to my bishop at the time. This is before 2 hour church, and I said, 46, one a week, I would love to teach this. And he's like, no, we're not doing that. So
yeah.
And you know, now it's even worse because we've only got half as many lessons.
Yeah.
So it's just really hard because some bishops just aren't open to these sort of things. I will tell you this. I had in fact, my old next-door neighbor was the bishop, great bishop, really, really liked him a lot. And I asked him, do you ever have any problems with people coming to you about church history? And in 5 years, he had never had anybody. And I was just like, really? Because I'd love to be a resource for that. I talked to a former state president. He said the same thing. And I'm just like...
Yeah, well, remember the data. So these people with faith crisis, what was it, 80% of them, say from the outside, they look like traditional believing members. Mm-hmm. They're uncomfortable disclosing their concerns in a public forum. I tell a story about a woman, she was a primary president, and she had been in a previous ward, a seminary teacher, and they'd just studied church history. And so she had some unresolved concerns about that time. And as a primary president, she was still sorting through them. And she went to her bishop because her stake president asked her to talk about these concerns. And the bishop immediately released her and her husband. And they didn't participate in church in any talks, prayers, or callings for the 6 month period that preceded my interview with her. So, you know, I mean, I was a young bishop. You just do the best you can, and you're inexperienced, and you bring your own background and belief, and so, you know, one of the challenges that we have is because of that, because this is something that we haven't talked about, and there's not a lot of patterns on how to deal with it. Some bishops either don't think it's a problem, or if it is a problem, they don't know what to do with it, and they think it's better not to do anything, or to revert back to, we should focus on the basics.
Pray,
read the scriptures, attend the temple, you know, come to your church meetings, repent, you know, those kinds of narratives. No one's saying those are wrong. Those are great things to do. But we probably need to step beyond that, because the data shows that we've been doing that, and we're increasingly losing members of the church to these kinds of concerns. So I think there needs to be some innovation, and I think there needs to be kind of permission for that innovation to occur, or there needs to be more institutional support. One of the things that I identify at the front of the book is I talk about how local leaders perceive this problem. So I say, do you see that addressing faith crisis is important in your ward? And almost universally, they say it's either strongly important. I think it's like 65% say it's strongly important, and 30% say it's important. So very small numbers say it's unimportant. Then I ask them whether they are receiving training either from the church or from their stake leaders on how to address faith crisis. And they're not receiving training. So even in their optimistic way of responding, they're saying largely no.
Do you remember what the percentage were for people who received training? Because I thought it was,
let's see if we can find
it. Tiny number, as I recall.
Oh, here I found it. So I asked, and again, this is local leaders, so they don't fully understand faith crisis.
Right.
So anything that they receive that is training that touches it, they will count, right, as faith crisis. So the question was, the church as a whole provides adequate information for leaders to help people who are in a faith crisis. 9% strongly agreed. This is local leaders.
Yeah.
This is 514 local leaders that responded to this.
9%.
Our stake and ward provides training to leaders about faith crisis. 1.6% strongly agreed, and 13% agreed. So these are, again, local leaders.
Leaders don't know what to do. I mean, isn't that what that says?
And then, so this is local leaders assessing their local leaders. My ward leaders know how to effectively minister to individuals in a faith crisis. 1.4% strongly agreed, and 25% agreed. So again, 75% of these local leaders saying, my ward doesn't know how to address faith crisis. Yet again, I was right on the numbers. 65% said it was very important to address in their ward, and 33% said it was important. So they know it's important, and they know it because it affects our families. So I asked these local leaders whether faith crisis has affected their families. And 64% that had children said it has affected at least one of my children. And 97% said it affected either a close friend or an immediate family member, brother, sister, spouse, parent, child. Mm-hmm. So it's all of us. You know, it's in my home, it's in your home, it's in my ward, it's in your ward. It touches all of us. And I guess the message that I wanted from the book, and I kind of put it into the title, was it's about ministering. And we're not talking about a program here. We're talking about what the word really means, which is to see people in their needs and to know how to respond to them. And if you have a disconnection with your ward, we need to recognize that, understand it, and find ways in which to truly minister to the needs that you have that are important to you. That's what being a part of a church community is all about. And when we have people who are disconnected, whether it's a lot or a few, it doesn't matter. We need to listen to them and understand them. So one of the things in the first part of the book that I talk about is just what those issues are. We've already talked about church history, but we also have to talk about the LGBTQ issues. Mm-hmm. And if you're gay or lesbian or have some sort of sexual identity that doesn't align with a mainstream identity, you're going to feel disconnected when you go to church. You're going to feel questioned. You're going to question whether you have a path forward. what that path looks like, and so you're going to feel disconnected. So the book's not about changing overall church policy in this area, but there's things that we can do that welcome people that struggle with this issue, and we can be compassionate, and we can change the dialogue that we have in our classes, because we know that there's gay, lesbian, transgendered people probably in every ward, or probably in every youth group, and we can change dialogues so that they know that they belong, and that we love them, and that we want them to worship with us, and that we will recognize that we don't understand their experience if we're straight. So that's an issue. I've learned that, and this isn't a surprise, I learned this at a pretty young age, but I've learned more and more about it, that our gender issues in the church can be really difficult. And there's many women that just don't feel like they have a voice at church, and that they're not kind of treated in the same way that men are. They don't have privilege, they get corrected, they don't speak as much, they don't get called into particular callings, they can't contribute to views that are important to them, they don't choose sacrament meeting talks. There's lots of different ways that women can express ways in which they're not involved. And so there, some women, and it's not all women, some women are very satisfied with the role that they have in the church, but others feel really disconnected. And that disconnection is something that we can minister to. We can learn about it, we can ask them, we can figure out ways within, you know, the structure of the church to be able to address that. It wouldn't be to ordain them as bishop, but we can find ways that they can participate and be involved in the leadership direction of the ward. There's nothing in the handbooks that prevent us from doing that. And we can understand how important it is for a church community to listen to them, because they will bring different ideas than if we simply have male voices kind of telling us what to do. So there's concerns about our culture and judgment that exists, how we label people, how we have a culture of leadership royalty, you know, and all of these things that that can cause people to not feel like they can trust leaders, or that they can feel like they can belong in the institution.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with David Osler. In our next conversation, we're continuing to talk about how to create a better church atmosphere. What are some things we can say when we hear an unorthodox opinion expressed at church?
But sometimes we can say things through, I know some people in the class will disagree with you, what you're saying. I appreciate how brave you are to say it anyway. You know, and I think that helps that person know that you know what's going on in that class. And you know that they took a risk by asking that. And I think it helps the people that might want to testify away that issue to understand that there is a person behind the comment, and that they have feelings, and that they are struggling with that.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please support Gospel Tangents and become a subscriber. For just $5 a month, go to patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview. And you can also get transcripts available in either our Amazon website, or if you want to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website at gospeltangents.com and you can click the yellow subscribe button. Of course, we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other places. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to click here to subscribe on YouTube, here for a transcript. And over here, we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again for listening.